It is 24 minutes after the hour. Again, a Transcendent Tuesday seems to come around almost every week. And so does Dr. Don. Dr. Don joins us from Garden Valley, Texas. Don is a member of the Board of Creation Moments, a biochemist. That means scientist. We cover a lot of scientific topics here with Don. But we're going back to basics today, the book of Genesis. Don is one of the most phenomenal teachers of Genesis that I've ever encountered, and he's just been a real blessing to us over the years. Don, good morning. Welcome.
Good to be here.
Article from the Institute for Creation Research that contends that there really was a great flood. Hey.
Oh, there was?
Oh, yeah? What? Really? Really?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, they, of course, you know, present more evidence of, and the evidence, there's over, John Morris, this is an article, well, this actually is a very old article in Institute of Creation Research by Dr. John Morris.
Well, this is the first time I've seen this data, even though this is an article back from 2001, and the headline, "Why Does Nearly Every Culture Have a Tradition of a Global Flood?" And he provides statistics, eh?
He does. The statistics that he provides in this article is that, you know, is there a favored family that's mentioned? So there's over 200 flood stories from around the world. And as far as Asia, and we're going to talk about Asia in a little bit, but as far as Asia to, you know, pretty much many, many cultures in around the world. So if there's so many flood stories, the first question you have to ask, is that just a coincidence? Are people just propagating the same story? Or are they descendant from those that actually experienced the flood? And that was passed down from generation to generation, until it was finally written either on clay tablets or some other form. And so there's so much evidence that one can't, you know, ignore it. And you can't really say that, oh, that was just a local flood. Well, if it was a local flood, pretty much every culture, like I said, from around the world have the same story. So they each had the same local flood, which then equals a global flood, right? I mean, if it's...
Well, this article examines the various stories, at least some of them, maybe all, must be all of them, because they have percentages here. There are 14 different characteristics to see what these different cultures, what their stories had in common. Can you review that for us?
Oh, yes. So the first one, as I mentioned, is there a favored family? 88% of the stories said, yes, there's a favored family. There was one family that went through the flood and were saved from the flood. Were they forewarned? 66% of the stories say that. Is flood due to wickedness of man? 66%. Is catastrophe only a flood? Yes, the 95%. So it was a catastrophe. I mean, a global flood would be quite a catastrophe, as we know. Was flood global? 95%.
That's interesting that individual cultures would have considered it a global event.
Yes.
As part of their story.
And then, you know, individual cultures, of course, you know, would say that their ancestors were involved in such a flood. Is survival due to a boat? 70% of the stories mention a boat. Were animals also saved? 67% say that they were. Did animals play any part? 73%, so the percentage went up a little bit. Did survivors land on a mountain? 57% say that gave that much detail, that the survivors in this boat landed on a mountain, you know, many of them with the animals. Was the geography local? And 82% said yes. Were there birds sent out? 35% of the stories say yes. and or at least mention that birds were sent out at the end of the flood, like the biblical story. Was the rainbow mentioned? Only 7% of the stories mentioned the rainbow. Did survivors offer a sacrifice? 13% said that they offered a sacrifice, and were specifically 8 persons mentioned. 9% of the stories mentioned specifically 8 people. Hmm. Now, it's interesting that, you know, from the Far East, that is the Chinese language, in the caricatures of the Chinese language, in the word, for example, for the word for a ship contains 3 other words. And so the caricature for a ship is made up of the word for boat and the character for 8 people or 8, and the character for mouth, or, you know, literally, I mean, it's persons, but it literally is a mouth.
Yeah, just to describe, it's a pictograph, so it's not a phonetic word. It symbolizes, no. It combines several different ideas into one character, which is then used as the word ship or the word flood. So this Chinese character is made up of those 3 elements, ship, 8, and mouths or people. So 8 people.
Right.
Fascinating. And this goes back, what, 1200 BC, about the Chinese pictograph writing.
Yes. And the stories of a flood in China go back 3,000, you know, at least 3,000 years. And so a very ancient story, and the story, just summarizing the story, they have in this other article by Armstrong. Once there was a colossal flood that was so great it covered the mountains, killing all mankind and land-dwelling animals, save for a heroic individual named Nuwa, who built an ark that housed 8 worshipers. When the flood water finally receded, the ark landed on a mountain, and the 8 individuals on board proceeded to repopulate the earth. I mean, that's phenomenal, right? Wow. That they would have that much detail in an ancient Chinese, story. It's like, why doesn't everybody believe that there was a global flood and that 8 people were on board and that it landed on a mountain somewhere? This particular story doesn't tell us where. And that the 8 people on board were responsible for repopulating the earth. So if this account, or not just this account, but if the flood account is is indeed accurate, then, which obviously it appears to be with this much collaboration or cooperation, if you will, from stories from around the world, then you're left with, what do we do with the Bible? And what do you do with Genesis? Because, you know, Genesis obviously spends some time talking about the flood and why the flood occurred in the first place and what happened after the flood. That is, Nimrod builds these 3 cities. In the middle of the 3 cities, he builds his tower so that he could reach up to heaven so he could be worshipped as God. And so, you know, the evil didn't get precluded from coming through the flood, unfortunately. And we're still experiencing the evil today from that. But you have to then think seriously about, do I take the biblical account seriously or not? And if you don't take the biblical account seriously, then what are you going to do with these 200 stories about the flood? And what are you going to do about, you know, there once was a global flood, and it wasn't a local flood. There once was a global flood, And now, if there was a global flood, that it had to be a great catastrophe, which then changed the face of the earth from a geological point of view. So maybe the things that we see in geology, for example, like the Grand Canyon being one, the Cascades on the West Coast, and all of the things that, all the geological things that point to a tremendous catastrophe happening on Earth. And that's just in the United States. I mean, it just doesn't stop with the United States, of course. It, you know, it goes, there's evidence for a global catastrophe like a flood all the way up, all around the world. And so your best explanation of that is the global flood. And if it's the global flood, and if it is indeed an accurate description, and I believe it's a very accurate description as to what happened, God doesn't leave us in the dark. You know, he informs us. He doesn't necessarily give us all the details, but he gives us enough details to say, okay, yeah, your word is true.
Well, speaking of details, you can draw more from these statistics than just the fact that there was a global flood. For example, if we look at the first three characteristics, a favored family, were they forewarned, is the flood due to the wickedness of man? That's 88%, 66%, 66% consensus, which suggests the presence of God, that this was punishment for the wickedness of man. Somehow the wickedness of man generated this global response to that, which talks about things of the spirit as opposed to geology and climatology. It talks about spirit here.
Right.
And these notions were planted in people's minds thousands and thousands of years ago, long time before we ever got to the point of having indoctrination by television and radio and the internet. These are things that people believed that because they had seen them, not because they'd heard somebody else describing them, but they had seen them firsthand.
Well, there's a paragraph later on in this article I want to read. It's short, but it really cuts to the quick here. Anthropologists will tell you that a myth is often the faded memory of a real event. Details may have been added, lost, or obscured in the telling and retelling, but the kernel of the truth remains. When two separate cultures have the same myth in their body of folklore, their ancestors must have either experienced the same event, or they both descended from a common ancestral source, which itself experienced the event. There's how these stories develop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I mean, we don't just have two. You know, there's 200.
Well, so if the Genesis count is accurate, and I just question that from a devil's advocate standpoint, it says the survivors were found in the Fertile Crescent. And that's where the people spread out to cover the earth, carrying that story with them. I don't know that it says, was the geography local? 82% said yes of these, but I don't know what that means.
Yes, was the geography local? Was it local to where the people were at that time?
Well, if we're all coming from that same group of people in the Fertile Crescent, then this would make sense. Because they're thinking back to where they were, who they were at that time in the history of the world.
Right. Mm-hmm. And everybody, if everybody descended from the same eight people, mm-hmm. then the population had to come from those same eight people where the boat or the ship, in this case, where the ark landed on the mountain. Right. So which we know is the Middle East.
I picture one of those boards you see on detective shows where they've got a wall full of papers and photographs, and they got red strings from one clue leading to the next leading. This is a whole network of red strings from this mm-hmm. article. I mean, you start connecting one of the data points with the other, with the other, with the other. It's very convincing.
One would think that this is more than enough evidence to suggest that the biblical account of Noah and the Noah's flood and the global, the global nature of the flood, that God was wiping out all of mankind, which was pretty well localized, in one place. It wasn't, mankind wasn't scattered all over the earth at that time, before the flood. I mean, he was in the outside of Eden, which it was the Euphrates and the Tigris River and things, which, got completely reformed after the flood. But people were living in the Middle Eastern area. The flood came, God destroyed mankind, along with it the animals, but some of the descriptions in the Chinese story is one of them, speaks about the animals coming into the ark two by two. Some of these stories get are quite detailed in their parallel to the biblical account. And if that is true, then the subsequent account of mankind that is recorded in Genesis should also be true. That is, that after the eight came out of the ark, then we know that they, according to the biblical account, they wound up in the plain of Shinar, and then we had this episode with everybody speaking one language, which would make sense if you got eight people to start with. They all have the same language, that, so where did language develop from? Well, we know where language develops from. If you continue the story in Genesis, language, God confused the languages of the people because they were reaching up to heaven so that Nimrod himself could become like a god. And so God had to disrupt things again, and he did that by confusing the language. And he told Noah, be fruitful, multiply, spread throughout the world. But the peoples had this propensity to just join together and form these cities. And they weren't supposed to do that. They were supposed to spread throughout the earth. But that didn't happen. So they had to have a little nudge, or a big nudge in this case, by God, and he actually confused the language. So the basic languages of the world, you ask, where did they come from? And the biblical account has the answer to that. There is no other answer to why are there different languages of the world other than the biblical account, unless you just want to, start making things up. But when God created Adam, for example, Adam had the ability to speak because that was a characteristic of God, communication. That was ultimately God's desire, was to have relationship with his creation, which in this case was man. And so Adam had the ability to speak. Eve had the ability to speak. They were speaking the same language that God spoke. So we know that there was one original language, and that language then got confused later on at the Tower of Babel, people had to scatter into their own language groups, if you will, throughout the earth. So, and God did that. You will often wonder, well, couldn't man just live in one place? And the Tower of Babel tells us why, because the man's heart is wicked. And if you have too many people in one place, it's easier for wickedness to propagate, if you will, and to start overcoming the population. And then, for our sake, if you will, God scattered man across the face of the earth.
Which brings to mind New York, Chicago, Los Angeles.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, it's happening all over again with these big cities. Where are the problems? It's not in the countryside. it's in these big cities, you know, that there is problems. And why is there problems? Well, you know, you got a lot of crime, you got gangs, you've got drugs, you've got all of this, all these issues that don't tend to be an issue out in the countryside. You know, the countryside, people are making a living by agriculture or by, you know, some other forms of means of making a living, and they're not being crammed into apartment complexes or these big apartment buildings.
Another thought just occurred to me on that note. The westward expansion of the United States in the 18th and 19th centuries, people were leaving highly concentrated areas, the 13 original colonies, and moving to where there was space.
Yeah, where they could farm, where they could ranch.
Yeah, there was a feel for escaping evil in some sense, some aspect, at some level. You were getting away from the congestion and the complication and the chaos of dense population.
Yeah. And so, and God, you know, did God change his mind and say, okay, it's okay now to live in a big city? I don't think so. You know, God knew that it was better for man to be spread out, you know, in the, there's still a lot of earth left. There's still, you know, to this globe, but we tend to, man tends to congregate into cities. Okay. You got greater trade in the cities, and you've got the possibility of making more money in the cities because you could trade with more people and you can build big factories and, you know, employ more people. And so it concentrates wealth, but it tends to concentrate wealth into individuals and not to spread it out amongst the population. So you have a working class that all they do is get up in the morning, go to work, come home, and they're just barely scraping by, where you've got these mega entrepreneurs that are making billions and billions of dollars, and they will never spend that amount of money in their lifetime. And many of them wind up using their wealth for evil and not for good. Some use it for good, but many wind up using it for evil because their thoughts, you know, man's thoughts, man's heart is, you know, continuously evil unless there is some type of resistance in their lives, like, you know, the Savior, for example, coming in and transforming their hearts and writing his laws on their hearts. And now, instead of taking advantage of people, you're actually helping people. You know, we just got through the Christmas season, and I watched again, I hadn't watched in a long time, A Christmas Carol, but there's a lot of very good lessons in the Christmas Carol, and it speaks to this whole element of greed, and how, you know, greed leads to loneliness, and ultimately it leads, you know, to death, and really an unfruitful life for people.
Well, Charles Dickens had it right, got it right.
Yes,
it's an interesting movie out there that it is not as well done, but I think it's called The Man Who Invented Christmas. And yes. It's very clever, very 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 well put together. Where the writer gets inspiration from otherworldly creatures, at least seemingly people alive in his imagination, and they help him write the story.
Yeah, fictitious story of Dickens, and you know him. Wanting to be a writer, and he wants to write a Christmas story, and nobody says, Christmas stories don't sell, and all this other stuff. So, yeah, but you have to see The Christmas Carol before you watch that movie to get an idea and make the connection between the two, you know.
Well, and Dickens came up with this notion that there would be a happy ending. and everybody else said, happy endings. What? Are you crazy? It'll never sell. It'll nobody will ever buy it. Nobody.
Right. Yes. And they didn't initially.
Yeah. Yeah. In the beginning, they didn't. They did not. Interestingly enough, Don, I was at a used bookstore or used clothing store yesterday, and it was my wife's idea, and I bought this book called Noah's Curse: Justification for American Slavery. And it's only $3, so I bought it. And interesting, I mean, he talks about the passage in Genesis 9, where after Noah grows grapes, gets drunk, it was Ham who came and shamed him.
Yes.
And then the brothers came and covered Noah up with their cloaks. And then afterwards, Noah said apparently that Ham and the descendants of Ham will be slaves of the other two brothers.
Yes.
We'll serve the two brothers. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's in Lutheran Study Bible, the one that I've got handy, it says the word slave. I put a picture of Ham and his wife, and his wife is dark skinned. And I put it up on that's from the Ark in Kentucky, their dioramas.
That'd be the Answers in Genesis point of view then. So
right, yeah. Yeah. So that's the Answers in Genesis point of view, and then the book also quotes a guy who wanted to work for Bob Jones University in Oklahoma, and he was told, and the guy revealed that his wife was dark skinned or was not of the same race, and he was told that he would not be allowed to apply because of that, because God had an idea in the way that the races should be divided and treated from the days of Noah.
And I'm thinking, this is fascinating, Don. We can either deal with it here or maybe do a whole program on it. I'm sure you have some ideas on Genesis 9.
Oh yeah, after the flood and man started to repopulate. It is a fascinating story. I don't know if we've got time for it here, but yes, that whole concept of Ham being cursed. I mean, he was literally cursed by his dad because. Right. The shame exposing, he made fun of his father, and he went to his brothers and basically said, "Aha, did you see, dad's all, he's naked," and his brothers had the right heart and the right mm-hmm. opinion.
Well, we've covered that in years past, but it's time to maybe revisit that whole story of a post-flood activity and how the people spread and where and why. And Don, maybe next week or the week after, we can take a look at that in detail, okay?
Yep, okay. We could do that. Yes, indeed.
Don Clark, again, a member of the board of Creation Moments, their website, creationmoments.com, and there you'll find scientific information with the emphasis on science, scientific information that supports and teaches the biblical story of creation. I think you'll find it fascinating, regardless of your beliefs now. If you're open to the evidence, that's a good place to find evidence. creationmoments.com. Bob, thanks, Don. Bob, how did you change your name, Bob?
John? No.
Okay.
That's my other name. Oh, my other name is Bob.
Yeah. All right. We'll get ourselves straight here in a minute.
Don, thanks. We appreciate you, and we'll look forward to the next time, okay?
Okay, very good. Speak to you later.